Chapter 14, 3 July 1934. Joey felt less confident when the time came for him to start work. He dressed himself in Nick Bender's suit again and polished his boots on a piece of newspaper. He found himself sitting in the same corridor and trying to fill in forms the forbidding secretary gave him. Then she summoned a youth called Stanley with pimply skin and a cheerful grin. "Show Joey what's expected of him," she said, "and make sure he knows his way round the factory." The first place he was shown was a dark and airless room under the stairs, furnished with a hard chair and a table that almost filled it. "Your bolt hole, otherwise called the mail room. You sort out what comes in and distribute it round the office and factory. You collect up all the letters and memos, either for posting outside or taking to another department. That takes up a lot of your day." "I open the letters?" "No, take them to the right department. Only open them if there's no clue on the envelope. It's a black mark if you open private mail." He followed Stanley, the office boy he was replacing, into a long hall furnished with rows and rows of desks. Joey thought Stanley over full of himself now he'd been promoted to clerk. "This is Joey, your new lackey," he said, introducing him to superior young ladies with scarlet lacquered fingernails. Their names and positions reeled off Stanley's tongue, and Joey thought he'd never remember them. They looked at him with cold disinterest and turned back to their typewriters. Offices for the managers opened off the hall on three sides. He was looking for Nick Bender's name on the doors, but couldn't see it. "Mr. Bender," Stanley said, "sits at that desk over there. He's just a trainee." The desk was deserted and bare. In the centre of the longest wall was an alcove furnished with two desks. Only one was occupied. Stanley said, "Miss Peacock, Mr. Mortis' secretary?" Miss Peacock had the wrong name. There was nothing showy about her middle-aged iron-grey hair and pearl-grey twinset. Rather, she seemed to shrink into the background. Two offices opened off the alcove. One was labelled Mr. Matthew Mortimer. Joey paused, feeling a shiver of trepidation. This was the reason he was here, to get even with the Mortimers. "He's never here. Goes off to Egypt for a year at a time. Lucky old him. His son Gregory Mortimer is in charge here now. That's his room." Stanley pointed to the door on the other side of the alcove. "Come on, you don't get personal introductions to them. Any mail you deliver to the Peacock." Joey was moving away when the door swung open, and a tall, broad-shouldered man with handsome features came striding out. His blue eyes raked Joey arrogantly as he passed. "That's him!" Stanley nudged his arm. Joey couldn't move. His resemblance to Lizzie was noticeable. His Lizzie. It was true, then. She was a Mortimer. He couldn't doubt it now. The family likeness was strong. Same fair colouring, though Greg's hair was pale yellow, whereas Lizzie's was ash blonde. But in the face, alike as two peas. "Right skirt puller, isn't he?" Stanley said behind his hand. "If he was a pauper, they'd still all be running." "The man who has everything," Joey choked, feeling his dislike for Greg growing. His shirt had been freshly ironed, his suit smarter than any Joey had seen. He couldn't drag his eyes away from Greg's white hands. Clean, manicured nails. Easy to see he'd never done a hand's turn in his life. Joey turned to peer into the office Greg had left, feeling a little sick. Large and airy, with a distant view of the river. Polished parquet floor and a big desk and leather chair. He hadn't realized until now just what he was pitting his strength against. "He's not much like his father, but they say he's the spitting image of his grandfather." Stanley was growing more communicative. Joey knew how everybody spoke with bated breath of the great Sir Hugo Mortimer, one of the most successful men this century. "He's expected to follow in his footsteps." "Lucky fellow." Joey felt livid with envy. More than envy, a green, purulent jealousy, a simmering anger that everything was so much easier for Greg Mortimer than it was for him. Greg had started with every advantage, but Joey was going to strip every penny from him. He'd vowed to Lizzie he would, and he was twice as determined now he'd seen him. and he wouldn't let Greg take Lizzie from him either. She was his. One day she'd be known as Elizabeth Mortimer, her rightful name, and he, Joey O'Malley, would restore her fortune to her. Joey thought the office seemed alien enough, but the factory was a hellhole. It was the largest building he'd ever seen. Everything felt sticky. His boots stuck to the floor as he walked across it. He soon learned to keep his hands in his pockets. Even the handrails on the stairs felt tacky. The sugar-crushing room was full of moving machinery, the like of which he hadn't known existed, and the floor was gritty as well as sticky. In the boiling shop, great vats bubbled and spat, making sinister noises. He watched engrossed as toffee was tipped into great cooling trays, and the operators in white coats added something. "What's that?" he asked. "Rum. Only rum flavouring, of course. And there go the raisins." Conveyor belts snaked about, jerking the product from one process to another. The toffee went on to be rolled and stretched and kneaded. Finally it was cut into small bars or bite-sized pieces and wrapped. Machines crashed and clattered. Men tending them shouted to each other above the noise, making Joey want to put his hands over his ears. The whole place was hot and airless, and so heavy with the scent of toffee and flavourings it caught at his throat. He wondered desperately if he'd ever find his way round on his own. Yet despite everything, he was fascinated. Money was being made here, real money, in amounts that made its owner a rich man. It would not be hard to make toffee like that. Anyone could do it. Next time he went into the factory, he would study the machines they were using, carefully, one at a time. When he was left to himself for a few moments, he went to an outside door to gulp deep lungfuls of fresh air. He was out on a loading bay which ran right along one side of the building. Beyond was a yard. A red van nosed its way in through the gates, gaudily advertising slabs of Evans's toffee on both sides. The driver, sharp-featured and thin, and only a few years older than Joey was himself, got out and swaggered towards him.
"Hello. You new in this madhouse?"
"Is it a madhouse?"
"You bet."
"I'll soon get used to it," Joey answered. To himself he bowed, "very soon."
"The stuff they make's okay. Have you tried it?"
A couple of wrapped toffees were pushed into his hand.
"Thanks."
He put them in his pocket.
"What's your name?"
"Bill Purley. I'm a salesman here. See you round, pal."
He was the first person at Evans's to treat Joey like a human being. He watched Bill disappear through the door. Minutes later, Stanley was shouting to him.
"Look lively, you! Come and give a hand when you're needed!"
Joey stumbled after him to the stockrooms.
"Like I said," Stanley sneered, "if the stockman wants help loading the vans, you gotta do it. You're the dog's body."
The stockman was indicating the boxes he wanted loading onto a hand truck and checking them off his list. Joey estimated he was working twice as fast as Stanley, and he still hadn't had time to study the contents. Treacle toffee, toffee with nuts, vanilla fudge, Devon cream fudge. The variety seemed endless. When the trolley was loaded to capacity, there remained one large package on the floor. Bill Purley had been signing papers and giving them a hand too. It seemed it was his van they were loading.
"Bring that package down, mate,"
he said to Joey. Stanley and the stockman manoeuvred the truck through the door.
"And this?"
Bill Purley slid another box from the shelf and piled it on top of the one in his arms. Joey felt heady with excitement. It was perfectly obvious what Bill was doing. He was using him to carry out a contraband box. He watched Bill carefully, half expecting a conspiratorial wink. It didn't come. Bill was whistling tunelessly under his breath. Joey placed his two boxes into the van. The contents of the hand truck were now being loaded. He'd recognized Bill as a likely soulmate the moment they met. Now it seemed he was like-minded about helping himself to his employer's goods. Nick drove carefully. He'd bought himself an Austin 7 Chummy, third-hand and already 7 years old. The ride was bouncy, and it wasn't all that easy to control on corners, but owning it was giving him a boost. He knew he'd been right to indulge himself with this car,
even though he'd had to do it on HP. His father would be shocked if he knew. He'd have preferred to lend him the money himself, but Nick couldn't bring himself to ask for favours. He hoped the car would do two things for him. It would anchor him to Evans's in a job he didn't like because he had to pay for it. He'd promised his parents he really would try to settle down this time. It would also get him out of the town and into the countryside. Nick didn't think he was going to make a town dweller, not even to please Dad. He hadn't seen green fields for 2 months, and today he was feasting his eyes on them. He'd ignored the main roads into Chester and driven through the lanes in between. Here he seemed to be 100 miles from the nearest town. He knew Hugo Mortimer lived somewhere near. He'd met him at Hannah's house. The road widened opposite a country pub, which was closed. Nick pulled into the side and stopped. Having the car allowed him to take an interest in other people's farms by looking over their hedges. The land was richer, more productive here, very different from Wales. There were hedges and not stone walls. More crops were grown. He could see wheat and barley. There was a lot of market gardening and many acres put down to potatoes. Now in midsummer the grass was lush. He missed the sheep, but there were plenty of cattle here. His eye caught a movement behind the hedge of a nearby field. He got out of his car and stood on the bank for a better view. He could see a young lad with a child trying to deal with a cow which seemed to be in some difficulty. A childish treble carried across the field. His interest aroused, Nick climbed the gate and crossed the field. "Can I help?" he asked, peering over the far hedge at them. "Is something the matter?" The figure he'd thought to belong to a lad was distinctly feminine now he was closer. She wore trousers tucked into Wellingtons and a pork-pie hat over short brown hair.
"Yes, please, if you could help us get her back to the cowshed. There's a stile just there. My father, she's calving, you see."
A young girl in a print dress was helping her to jostle the cow along.
"She's been at it for hours. I'm a bit worried."
The cow, an old shorthorn, was near exhaustion and could hardly walk.
"Your father would be better giving you a hand to get it in," Nick said.
"He can't." The girl's voice was agonized. "Do you know anything about cows?"
He'd helped cows to calve many times at home. It could take the brute strength of several men.
"Come on," he urged the animal. "How far do we have to go?"
The little girl walked ahead, showing him the way.
"Dad said to leave it. It would calve on its own. It did last time."
He could see they were sisters.
"I'm afraid this time it won't," Nick said gravely. "There's some complication."
Once tethered in its stall, the cow sank to the floor. He took off his Harris tweed jacket and rolled up his sleeves.
"I thought if we could get Clover in, then we could get Dad as far as the cowshed, and he could tell me what to do."
The older girl seemed grateful that he was taking over. Nick did what he'd done many times at home. "The calf's still alive. I can feel it sucking at my fingers." He was relieved to find it was a simple mispresentation. It didn't need much strength. He had it delivered within 10 minutes. A strong bull calf. He pulled it up to the mother's head, and after a few moments she began to lick it. Nick felt a glow of satisfaction.
"I haven't lost the knack."
"Thank goodness."
The older girl was smiling at him.
"It's going to be all right. Thank you. I was so afraid."
"Your father shouldn't have left her so long."
"It's not his fault."
Her smile was gone.
"If we have a problem, we call on our neighbour, but he's gone to visit his wife in hospital. My mother's gone with him. We all thought Clover would be all right. Come into the house and meet Dad. You'll need a wash anyway." "How did you know what to do?"
the smaller girl asked, picking up his coat and tie.
"My father's a farmer, too."
"A farm like this?"
"A little different," he said, "but we keep cows."
"This is my sister Lorna. She's 12. And Marion, by the way. Marion Dodge."
The farm buildings were old and in need of repair. The farmhouse was in a similar state. As they went through the kitchen, Marion poked the fire into a blaze and lowered the kettle onto it.
"You must stay and have a cup of tea," she said. "I was so glad to see you coming to help."
Lorna showed him where he might wash and found him a clean towel. Then she took him to the parlour to meet her father. Nick was brought up short at the sight of the wheelchair. He'd not expected that.
"Tossed by a bull," the man said philosophically as he shook his hand. "Neville Dodge."
He still looked relatively young. Nick understood only too well what a terrible handicap it must be to running a farm.
"I'm very grateful for your help. I'm afraid I'm in the wrong job now."
"So am I," Nick said expansively.
He felt on home ground. "We're trying to sell the farm." Marion was a sturdy girl with a cheerful smile. About his own age, he thought. "No buyer yet, though."
"Marion's a great help," her father said. "I don't know what we'd do without her. I don't suppose you'd be interested in buying."
"Couldn't afford it," Nick said regretfully.
"But I'd like to help. Perhaps I could come again."
He explained his circumstances.
"I'm free at weekends, at a loose end, really. I don't know many people in Birkenhead."
"Our guardian angel must have sent you to Birchill," its owner said. "There's nothing we'd like more, is there, Marion?"
Her friendly brown eyes smiled at him. She was almost as tall as he was, with well-built shoulders. A country girl born and bred. Nick was pleased. He felt a friend like Marion was exactly what he needed. Before Lizzie had even taken off her hat and coat the next morning, Mrs. Edmonds said,
"You can start in the kitchen. First the washing up, then tidy round and mop the floor. There's a few clothes to rinse out and put on the line, then dust and hoover the living room and stairs."
Lizzie was trying in vain to remove the bloodstains from striped aprons when Mr. Edmonds called upstairs.
"Come and scrub my chopping blocks and clean out this mincing machine. It's more important to have this room clean. We get inspectors round, you know."
Before she was halfway through that, he called her to help in the shop. All day the job she was asked to do piled up. Mrs. Edmonds complained because she hadn't got round to hoovering the living room. She didn't sit down between 9 in the morning and 6 at night, except during her lunch hour, when she went home and made herself a sandwich in the dark room, which felt colder than it did outside in the street. The following days were exactly the same. Lizzie decided the work was heavy. Joey was usually home before her in the evenings, and had the fire going and was cooking dinner on it by the time she got in. She was too tired to do more than doze in front of it for the rest of the evening. Joey said that perhaps she'd feel better when she got more used to the job. Lizzie doubted it. She knew that on Friday and Saturday nights she wouldn't finish work until after 9 o'clock. On Thursday, as she was leaving for her half-day, she paused to look at a blue dress in the window of the shop next door. A dark-haired girl was locking up.
"Settling in your new job, then?" she asked.
Lizzie pulled a face.
"Rather work in a dress shop like yours."
"Not my shop. I'm the sales assistant."
"I'm that, and the charwoman, washerwoman, cook and bottle washer as well."
The girl laughed.
"I suppose you know you're the 7th girl the Edmondses have had this year."
"No."
"Nobody can stick them. I hear they're right old slave drivers."
"I don't suppose there's a vacancy in your shop?" Lizzie asked hopefully.
"No, but they're looking for another cleaner at the pictures if you're interested."
"At the cinema, further along this road?"
"Yes, at the Lyceum."
The blind was just coming down in the butcher's window. Lizzie dropped her voice.
"Anything would be better than this."
"There's a matinee on a Thursday, so the manager will be there now. You could pop in and ask about it."
Lizzie went slowly up the white marble steps, knowing she had to find herself a different job. The girl in the pay desk seemed friendly. She called the gold-braided commissionaire to take Lizzie up to the manager's office. He let her pause in the foyer to study the stills of Shirley Temple and the posters advertising her film Now and Forever.
"On for the next 3 days," he told her. "Good film."
She thought the manager friendly, too. He said he needed somebody young and slim to get between the rows of seats and pick up all the cigarette packets and sweet wrappings that were dropped. It was morning work only, but he offered her the same wages she was getting from the Edmondses.
"I'll take it," she said quickly, and agreed to start the following Monday.
"Make sure you get your money from the Edmondses," Joey said, "before you tell them where to put their job."
The offer was a week's trial to see if we suited each other,
Lizzie told him.
They don't suit me, so it's fair enough if I don't want to carry on.
They'll want you, Joey said. Just make sure you get your money in your hand before you tell them.
He suggested they go to see Shirley Temple that evening, so she could get a better view of what she'd be cleaning. As the usherette showed them to their seats, Lizzie whispered,
I asked the manager if he ever had vacancies for usherettes. They see all the films. I think I'd like a job like that.
No, you wouldn't, Joey said indignantly. I'd be home by myself every night. You wouldn't get home till midnight.
Of course I'd like it. Just showing people to their seats, no cleaning, she said. And the pay's better. 25 shillings to start, because it's evening work.
No, Lizzie, we'd hardly see each other.
I thought you'd want me to, when you heard about the wages.
No, money isn't everything.
I thought it was to you.
Lizzie swallowed back her resentment. Joey was always telling her he thought her very special, but sometimes she wished he would allow her to make her own choices.
No, definitely not an usherette. You'd even work weekends.
No need to argue about it, Joey. It's a cleaning job I've got, and it's mornings only,
Lizzie said as the curtains swished open and the lights dimmed.
Good thing, too. You will have every afternoon to rest, and you'll be able to have my tea ready by the time I get home.
She made herself forget Joey's domineering ways. It was a rare treat to go to the pictures, and she meant to enjoy it.
We'll go as often as we want when we're rich, he said on the way home. Every night if you want to. No need to be an usherette to see all the films then.
Joey got off the bus in New Ferry and was walking back to his room when a red van overtook him and pulled into an adjoining street. He couldn't miss the slogan, A.A. Evans Toffee Makers to the World, nor the slabs of brightly coloured wrapped toffee displayed on its sides. He recognised Bill Purley, the salesman, behind the wheel. Some 20 yards down it pulled into the curb and stopped.
Hello, Joey called. I didn't know you lived here.
He was surprised to see Bill's sharp features twist into a grimace.
What's the matter? Don't say anything at work about seeing me here, he warned.
Why not? Bill drew his finger across his throat in a dramatic gesture.
You're not supposed to bring the van home.
Of course I won't say anything.
See you don't.
He grinned.
I won't. I'm not daft.
Joey thought for a moment.
Any chance of a lift in the mornings? You're not slow. All right, be here 9:15. I'm not waiting for you.
Joey went on more slowly, musing that perhaps one day, when he looked a bit older, Bill might be swayed to teach him to drive that van. Lizzie had a saucepan of stew simmering on the fire when he got in. Their room seemed more welcoming these days, brightened by a fire and the succulent scents of dinner. It made all the difference to his comfort that Lizzie didn't work in the afternoons.
I love having every afternoon to myself, she'd said. Plenty of time to shop and tidy up here, and then I go down to the river and walk along the shore. It's lovely on a breezy day, and you'd never believe what's washed up by the tide.
Lizzie picked up anything burnable on the high-water line. She always brought home a large bag full of wood, odd boots and rubber-soled plimsolls, enough to give them a fire all evening. Joey's duties included making tea twice daily for the office staff. Tonight he brought out packages from his pockets and laid them on the table.
Tea, sugar and biscuits, he said. Don't buy any more. I think I can bring all we need.
You'll get caught, Joey. It's silly to lose your job for a few biscuits.
Silly to spend hard-earned cash on something we can get for nothing, he retorted.
Previously he'd brought toffee home for Lizzie. She'd looked at that suspiciously, though factory workers were not barred from eating the product while they were making it. It was thought they soon grew tired of the taste.
I'm very careful, he said.
It's not the point. You can't get rich by taking biscuits. Petty pilfering won't make the Mortimers poor. All it does is frighten me. If you're caught...
I'll have to think of something else, he cut in. Get my hands on bigger amounts.
Joey, no. We're doing all right, aren't we?
Cleaning the picture house isn't much of a job.
I like it, going along the rows picking up cigarette packets and toffee papers. You'd be surprised how many of Evans's I find. It's easy work, not a bad life.
It could be better.
We could make it better, she said. We could go to see Nick again.
Whatever for? He was bristling with irritation in an instant.
He's a friend, and the only person we know in Birkenhead.
I see more than enough of him at work.
But I don't. He'll help me find my mother.
Lizzie, I'll help you find your mother, but one thing at a time. I need to think of a way to do it.
No, you don't. Nick would take me to see Mrs. Mortimer. There'd be no harm in hearing what she has to say.
No, Lizzie. He felt a jab of alarm.
I'll go by myself, then, one afternoon. I think I could find my way to her house. It was called Oakridge, wasn't it?
No, don't you dare go near her.
He saw her face grow pale with shock. Her mouth was open. His sudden flare-up had shaken him, too. He said more gently,
I don't want you talking to her. She'll persuade you to leave me.
No, I won't leave you. We're having a good time here now, aren't we? But you've always said you'd help me do it. Wasn't that why we came to Birkenhead in the first place?
No, he almost groaned. Just the thought of it brought the unknown closer, with cold feelings of loss and insecurity.
It was. When we were children, he used to say my father was a king, that we'd find out all about my family. I thought you wanted to.
No. Her blue Mortimer eyes were searching his face in dismay. He had to explain. It frightens me, Lizzie. I'm afraid I'll lose you.
No need to be frightened.
Her arms were round him, hugging him close.
The Mortimers could change everything for us. I know it. I don't want anything changed. Not yet. You said you like being here. That we're all right as we are.
Yes, yes. Don't worry yourself, Joey. I don't like seeing you upset.
You promise, Lizzie, not to go near her. I don't want you going in the afternoon when I'm not about. Not yet.
I won't. I wouldn't go without telling you.
Promise, then. One day we'll do it together, like I planned. Just be patient with me.
All right, I promise.
That made him feel a bit better. He should have known he could depend on Lizzie.
After all, they knew you were at Yarrow for 14 years and never came near you.
She said nothing for a long time. Then he heard her sigh.
It would be fun to see Nick, though.
No, we got what we wanted from him. We don't need him now.
You always said Nick was all right, that you liked him.
Not any more. He's one of them.
Joey had been working for Evans's for almost a month.
Everybody's very stuck up, he said. They treat me as though I'm the lowest of the low. Nobody speaks to me, except to say, Joey, do this, Joey, do that.
What sort of things do they ask you to do?
Take this to the foreman in the factory. Get me a cup of tea.
They just don't know you, Joey. It'll be different when you've been there a while.
It certainly will. I'll show them. I even have to call Nick Mr. Bender. And Mr. Mortimer is the worst of the lot. I hate him.
I thought you said he was away.
Yes, he is. Greg Mortimer, I mean. He's really bossy.
Well, his father owns the business.
He's taken a dislike to me.
More likely, Joey, you've taken a dislike to him. Just relax. You'll feel different when you settle in.
It's a dirty, horrible place. They've been making a fortune in that building for over 100 years. The windows are so high nobody can see out. It's unnatural.
Unnatural for you? You're used to being in the open air.
So are you.
When winter comes, perhaps we'll be glad to be indoors.
Hannah drove home from Yarrow feeling depressed. She'd taken far too long to make firm plans for Elizabeth, and because of that she'd lost her again. She rang Greg at the office the next morning.
Did you give the job to Joey O'Malley?
Yes, he started here. Gleason thinks he might be all right, though I don't like the look of him myself.
Why not?
He looks sly and malevolent somehow.
I'll come in, Greg. I want to talk to him.
As she got out of her car later on that morning, Hannah looked up at the old building. When she'd worked here all those years ago, she'd felt at ease in these long bare corridors, but had rarely been here since her marriage. In the alcove off the main hall, she found Greg's secretary working at her old desk. Miss Peacock had been hired to replace her. Hannah remembered showing her round all those years ago. Layla Peacock looked older, but she hadn't changed much. She still had a self-effacing manner, wore drab clothes and steel-rimmed spectacles. Matt's office was not being used while he was away. Greg unlocked it for her and opened the window because already it smelled disused. The sweet, sickly smell of boiling sugar she knew so well was soon rolling in. Hannah sat down at the bare desk and pulled the clean blotter towards her. The tap on the door was polite. It opened immediately. A strange-looking lad stood nervously on the threshold.
"You wanted to see me, Mrs. Mortimer?"
"Are you Joey O'Malley? Do come in and sit down." He edged further into the office, but remained standing, holding on to the back of the chair she'd indicated, as though seeking support. Hannah couldn't make out why his face should seem so lopsided. "I've just come back from Yarrow." She wasn't going to beat about the bush. "I hear you've just come to Birkenhead and brought Elizabeth with you."
"Yes," he agreed.
"I want to find her." His face had a cunning, rather foxy look. "I want to help her." He didn't answer. She assumed Matt's imperious manner. "So, where is she now?"
"She doesn't need help, Mrs. Mortimer. She's perfectly all right."
"Nevertheless, I and everybody at Yarrow would like to know where she is." Hannah had the feeling in the pit of her stomach that she was going to fail again.
"She wouldn't want me to tell anybody."
"Why on earth not?
She doesn't want to go back to Yarrow."
"There's no need. It's up to her. I only want to speak to her, to make sure she's all right, to help her."
"She has a job, thank you. She's managing perfectly well."
"Is she living with you?" His eyes were casting about as though for inspiration. She realized for the first time that they were not a pair. One was the colour of strong tea, and the other of blue slate.
"No."
Hannah wasn't sure that was the truth. His address would be on his records. She could check on that.
"She has a live-in job working for a couple of elderly ladies. She's safe and well. They're kind to her, and she's happy there."
Hannah's stomach muscles contracted.
"That's housework. Look, I've found a boarding school for her, St. Hilda's. A few years there will make all the difference to her prospects. Lizzie doesn't want to go to boarding school. She reckons she's had enough schooling. She thinks she's too old to start at another."
"She's not 14 yet."
"That's for leaving age for the likes of us."
Hannah felt another stab at that. She'd never liked Maisie O'Malley. She didn't trust her son. Didn't like him. She tried harder to persuade him.
"She'd never forgive me if I told you." Joey had become defensive. "She told me not to. She doesn't want people going round to see her. It might upset the people she works for. She just wants to be left alone."
His lips came together in a firm line. Nothing Hannah could say would shake him. She let him go. What was the use? She sat on at Matt's desk, trying to think. Merseyside was a huge conurbation. It wouldn't be easy to find somebody who didn't want to be found. Her last hope was that the girl would be at Joey's address. When Greg took out his records, she found he'd given Nick's address. Greg sent for Nick to come up. He sat down in front of Hannah, his boyish freckles making him look both honest and worried.
"I'm sure they're together, but I've no idea where they're living," he said. "I've already had a go at Joey, but he's not saying. He thinks he's protecting Lizzie, keeping her out of our clutches. I can't persuade him otherwise."
Hannah believed him. She went to have another word with Greg. He was losing patience both with her and Joey O'Malley.
"I'll tell him we have to know where our employees live. I'll get an address out of him. I won't stand any nonsense from him."
He came back 5 minutes later, waving a piece of paper at Hannah.
"Here you are. He's got a room at this address."
Greg was pleased with himself. "Stanley Road, New Ferry," she read. "I'll call round now and see if Elizabeth is there." Hannah was full of hope. Joey O'Malley was pinned down at work. Even if the girl had got herself a job too, she could ask if she was living there and when she'd be at home. She drove slowly along Stanley Road, looking for the number he'd given. When she found it, she got out, unable to believe her eyes. The house was untenanted and looked as though it had been for some time. The front garden was overgrown. She walked back, checking the house numbers. She had not made a mistake. It filled Hannah with a boiling frustration. "Perhaps it's as well," Greg said crossly when she told him. "Stop worrying about her. She's old enough to make her own way in life now, if that's what she wants. I'll give that little sod the sack. I'm not putting up with this sort of behavior from an office boy." "No," Hannah said, "don't do that." She had the feeling that Nick was right, and if Lizzie was living with Joey O'Malley, it would create more problems for her if he didn't have a job.